And good to be with you on this Tuesday, the 21st of April. And, of course, coming up on Saturday, we'll be commemorating the 100th anniversary of ANZAC. Quite topical at the moment, obviously. If you read all the newspapers and watch the television news, there's a lot of talk about it in the lead up to it. We're going to talk about ANZAC from a different perspective, and we're going to hear from Annette Brownlee, who's convener of Just Peace Queensland. They're one of the members of IPAN, the Independent and Peaceful Australian Network. We'll tell you all about their work on Let's Talk today here on 98.9 FM and the National Indigenous Radio Service. But to begin with, I should acknowledge the traditional owners of the land where Let's Talk is broadcast. I'd also like to pay my respects to our elders, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander elders and non-Indigenous elders. And welcome to you if you're listening to us through 98.9 FM or indeed via satellite on the National Indigenous Radio Service. Great to have you along. Karen Durante with you for Let's Talk. And I have got with me today Annette Brownlee, who is a convener for Just Peace Just Peace Queensland. Hello to you, Annette.
Hiya, Karen, and everyone listening. Thanks for having me on the program.
Tell us a little bit about yourself. When we have First Nations people come in, we ask them to tell us a bit about their mob and their country and where they come from. What about your
my background and connections? I'm a third generation Australian. My parents brought us up at Holland Park. Dad built a house there, and poor old Daddy not long died last year, so I'm still sort of mourning his loss. Myself, I'm always was a fairly caring person, and I always wanted to be a nurse, so I've been a nurse for over 40 years. I have a large family. We had 5 children, and family and my work as well as my peace work have been a part of my life really from teenage years. My brother was at risk of being called up into the Vietnam War, and that kicked me off as an activist, an anti-war activist from many years ago.
Were you at uni at the time? Or
no, I was nursing.
You were nursing by that stage, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I at the very beginning of the Vietnam War, my first job at 15 when I left school, I worked for a photographer in Queen Street. And I'll tell this story because it's with me so clearly right now that his studio looked down on Queen Street, which then wasn't a mall, it was a street, mm-hmm. with trams running down it. And the first lot of Australian troops marched down Queen Street off to the war in Vietnam. And I remember talking to my workmate at the time saying how opposed I was to our involvement in the Vietnam War and my concerns about it at 15.
Yes, surprisingly, 15. I mean, what were you reading or watching or what? I mean, apart from your brother, you know, facing the prospect of being conscripted to go and fight in Vietnam, mm-hmm. what else was going on that propelled you into that direction?
Well, I came from a very political family. My dad and my mother were both very political. My dad came back from the Second World War politicised. Mm. He tells a story about how when they were in New Guinea, there was lots of downtime in between battles and being engaged in war-making activity. So the blokes would just sit around and talk. And when they talked about the war and they talked about the economic conditions in Australia, and many of them came back from the Second World War very committed to peace and a better society. So that's really influenced me greatly growing up, with the influence of my dad in particular, yeah. mm. but also my mum. My mum was a member of the Union of Australian Women. I don't know whether you're aware of that women's organisation. She was in that organisation with Kath Walker.
Yeah.
So we grew up in an environment of discussion about what was going on around us, and a strong conviction that we must never go to war again. And here we are in the 1960s with my brother at risk of being his number being drawn up to go and fight in this horrible war in Vietnam.
Right. And your father spoke quite openly about his wartime experiences, because quite often you hear that men, when they come back, and women for that matter, come back from conflict, that there's a lot of post-traumatic stress.
Yes. He was pretty quiet about it too. He just really was firmly convinced that we must never let this happen again. He lost his brother and the uncle that I never had, you know, in the last months of the war. And I can still get emotional about that.
Yeah.
So that was part of it, I think.
Mm. So the what was happening with your parents that politicised you, made you become, you know, just steered you into that direction.
Yeah.
So what sort of things did you do as a 15-year-old? Because I don't know, can I imagine if I had a 15-year-old daughter today, how I would feel about her, say, objecting to what's happening over in the Middle East and, you know, other areas of conflict where Australia's, you know, involved, whether it's as a peacekeeping.
I think my parents were pretty proud of me and they were happy for me to march alongside of them as well in those big, well, to begin with, quite small anti-war protests in Brisbane and around Australia. And it was interesting to look at the Vietnam War and the history of how the opposition to the Vietnam War built. And certainly when I was talking to my workmate in that photography studio, at that stage there was popular support for our troops going to Vietnam.
Yep.
Very popular. And if you spoke out against it, you were unpatriotic, just as, you know, today if you talk about anything to do with Anzac Day as being anything other than, you know, related to the, you know, glory of Australia's role in that war, you can be considered, by some people at least, as unpatriotic. I don't think the sentiment is the same now as it was then. Mm-hmm. But it took several years and lots of death and lots of building of that anti-war movement through the unions, through the universities, through, at the time, quite a progressive Labor Party and people like Tom Uren speaking out against the war, that over time built those big moratoriums and ended our role in Vietnam with the Whitlam government being elected.
So has peace always been the forefront of you know, your activism? You mentioned your mother there and the work that she did with the Women's Union and, you know, how she did stuff with Ujuru, New Knuckle as well. Mm-hmm. So had you also developed an interest in First Nations affairs?
Definitely. It was very much a part of our growing up as well, that this, you know, the link between progressive movements in the 60s and 70s and throughout that time since, I think, has been very strong, and the injustice of the occupation and treatment of Aboriginal people. I mean, I'm old enough to remember the referendum. And to think that before that referendum, Aboriginal people weren't even considered citizens of this country is unthinkable today. But that it wasn't unthinkable before that referendum. Mm. I mean, those sort of issues were very much a part of the sense of justice that we talked about in our family.
It's, you know, it's interesting, you know, if you look at Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people before that time, you know, not even seen as citizens yet. We're talking about sort of wartime and people going off to fight for this country. And a lot of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people did as well. I mean, how does that sit with you, you know, knowing that you are a peace-loving person, that, you know, war is such a awful enterprise, if you like?
I certainly am a peace-loving person, but I do believe that we have a right to defend our country.
Yep.
Just as Aboriginal people defended their country during the occupation and the many now becoming known frontier wars, that they fought against that occupation.
Yeah.
I think the Second World War in many ways was a defence of country. Mm-hmm. And in that sense, you know, I would see the justification of fighting the Japanese in that war.
Mm-hmm.
The First World War was another story altogether. It was a war for empire.
Mm.
And we learnt the hard way during the Second World War when the United Kingdom let us down in the Far East, as they called it, and let Singapore go. And they still wanted our troops to come to Europe to help defend the empire there. But they really weren't that concerned about the experience in the far-flung colonial territory of Australia.
Mm.
So,
what about the Boer War? Because we've had Dale Kerwin from Griffith University, who's been doing a lot of research, and they're pushing for a memorial for black diggers here in Queensland. We're yet to see one acknowledging the efforts of black diggers. The Boer War, I mean, there were lots of First Nations men who went over there and then were left there, didn't come back.
I've just recently heard that story.
Mm.
It is an incredible story that, again, needs to be known more. We don't need to know more about our history. Again, if we're coming back to thinking of just how we build a healthy self-identity as a nation,
mm.
now we need to understand our past. We need to acknowledge the terrible things that happened as well as the good things that happened. And there are many good things that aren't acknowledged as well, you know, like the efforts of trade unions to build a decent standard of living for people in this country.
Yep.
So Dale's story just recently about, the possible reality that Aboriginal people who went as part of the Australian infantry to fight on behalf of England again in the Boer War basically may have been left behind. Terrible, terrible thing to think about, isn't it, that you would leave some of your troops behind.
Mm, mm. I know you want to explore our national identity and how it's intrinsically tied up with Anzac, and that's something that you'd like, you know, for us to have a discussion about. I mean, the whole of the community.
Yeah.
And it's probably a discussion that, like you said before, is not going to win you any popularity points?
Probably not.
Especially but why do we?
Our Prime Minister.
Well, he did say that he wanted to see people come out in numbers for the 100th, anniversary of Anzac. But you know, why do you think our identity, the Australian identity, is so tied up with Anzac?
I think it's deliberate on the part of the state, really. It justifies future wars. It helps them to hide the reality of the beginnings of white entry into Australia. But it does not do them or us any favours in the long run. Because I think that we have a very weak national identity in this country, and that's dangerous for an individual or a country to not have a strong sense of who they are, where they come from, and what their past is. That's how you develop a healthy way forward.
Otherwise, you have extremes, like we saw in the Reclaim Australia rallies and stand up against racism rallies that, particularly clashed in Melbourne recently.
Right. I agree. And into the void, where there is a void, other influences will fill it, and often very unhealthy influences. So, you know, as a nation, we're changing from year to year in the mix of people that live here.
Mm.
And it's really important for the newcomers as well to have a true history of Australia, not just from colonisation, but into the far distant, thousands of years that the history of Australia is about. And it will only be on the basis of that the newcomers, however recent they've arrived, can really feel a sense of pride in who we are. And it's that healthy self-respect, again, whether it's me as an individual or a community or a nation, that helps us to move forward in strong and healthy ways. And without it, we are going to make mistakes. Like, you know, we continue to make the mistake of following empire into wars. And, you know, since Gallipoli, we could go through that as well if you'd like.
Well, I just we might take a break and just let people know who I'm speaking to in case they've just tuned in. I'm speaking with Annette Brownlee, who's convener of Just Peace Queensland. Just Peace Queensland is a member org of IPAN, Independent and Peaceful Australian Network. And we're also hoping to be joined by Ruby Wharton as well from the Brisbane Aboriginal Tent Embassy. She is making her way to the studios, I understand it, so she may join us before the program wraps up for today. But Annette Brownlee is with me. My name is Karen Durante, standing in for your regular host, Tiger Bales. And you're listening to 98.9 FM. Karen Durante with you for Let's Talk. Annette Brownlee is convener of Just Peace Queensland, and Mike's just phoned in to say hello. Hi, Mike.
Hey,
hi,
Mike. Karen. Thanks
lovely
for a great
to hear your
show.
Voice.
Hey, look, I just wanted to lend the support to Annette and the Just Peace movement. As a non-Indigenous person, I congratulate her on her forthright approach to acknowledgement of the frontier wars. Again, as an Anzac veteran's offspring, if you like, my grandfather was on the beach at the first landing as a stretcher bearer, and he was a peace loving man. He went to serve his people, and when he came back, as Annette mentioned, he, like many others, were committed to peace. He turned his mind to the care of others, and you know, this is something we need to recall and also look. Again, can I just encourage all people, particularly non-Indigenous people and new arrivals to this country, to become more aware of the frontier wars, the wars fought by the First Nations people of this land in protection of their ancient custodial rights to the country and the care of the country. And it's, I think, behoves us who have survived war, either by coming back or being a descendant of those who have served. I think it behoves us as non-Indigenous people to get right behind this movement to ensure that the War Memorial in Canberra is there to recognise First Nations people and their struggles in the frontier wars, so that people like me and Annette can visit that place in true respect, knowing that there's honesty that's been displayed, and we've come of age that we can acknowledge that we too are descendants of people who invaded this country. Thank you.
Thank you for your phone call, Michael.
Good to hear you, Scotty.
Yeah, Annette, she's wonderful. She's a wonderful nurse. I'll never forget the care that I had from Annette and her colleagues at the Mater Hospital. And, good-hearted people, that's a stairway to heaven for you.
Thanks for your call. 98.9 FM, Let's Talk, you're listening to on the National Indigenous Radio Service as well. And if you feel compelled to phone us, the number is 3892011888 if you want to talk about some of the issues that Annette has raised today here on Let's Talk. We were talking a bit about our national identity and how it's tied up with Anzac and Gallipoli, and you'd like to see us have a discussion about a different identity that isn't tied up with, well, what was essentially a failed campaign.
That's true. On my way in here this morning, I heard Sam Neill talking about the telemovie that he has written and directed on ABC TV Tonight. I wasn't going to watch it, but I am now, because he talked a lot about just the sorts of things we're talking about today, really, and how Gallipoli and tying Gallipoli to our national identity does give legitimacy to future wars. So he talked about the reinvocation of the Anzacs with this current troop decision to send another 300 troops to Iraq along with New Zealand. And there are now over 1,000 Australian troops in Iraq. I don't know whether too many people actually know that. We were told and that we'd ended our time in Iraq, and here we are back in it again. And I do believe that the prestige that's given to Australia sending troops to foreign lands is an attempt to win us favour with the superpower of the day. Today it's the United States. In the times of Gallipoli and the beginnings of the Second World War, of course, it was Britain. But here we are again doing the same old thing, you know, tagging along with the superpower of the day.
Who have we got on the line? Oh, no, someone has phoned in. Can you try again if you've just rung in? We will come to your call in just a moment here on Let's Talk. Let's talk a bit about Just Peace Queensland. What is it?
Well, we're a group of people who got together after the World Trade Tower attacks in 2001, clearly knowing what next to expect.
Yep.
That horrific event where so many people died in such a dramatic and well-televised event certainly was a shake-up for the world, but it was also an opportunity for the neoconservative group of military people in the United States to make the next move, which we could all see about to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So a month later, on the 7th of October 2001, Afghanistan started to be bombed by the United States and its allies, a country that was already in rubble from the war with the Soviets, was bombed again. And as we all know, because it's still fairly recent, that then led on to the war in Iraq.
Yep.
So Just Peace formed in that time, knowing that we needed a grassroots movement, an organisation that was non-partisan, that ordinary people from the community could get involved in. And we built the organisation up very quickly with big public meetings in the City Hall. We played a leading role in the biggest anti-war march that Brisbane's ever seen in 2003, in March 2003 with somewhere between 70 and 100,000 people marching through the streets that day.
Yep.
And many of your listeners will have been there. It was an amazing day. And although if we want to talk about that anti-war protest that was international, of course,
yep,
and how we were let down, we can. I think there's a lot of people look back on that and say, well, what did it achieve?
Yeah.
And that's another area of discussion.
What's happened with the movement now? Is it sort of still going strong, you know, after Afghanistan was bombed, or has it, you know, waxed and waned depending on, I guess?
I think it definitely waned after John Howard took us to war, despite the fact that 1 in 10 Australians marched that day, and the surveys of the time were showing 70% of Australians did not want us to participate in that war.
Yep.
They had a very strong premonition of just exactly what would happen. And here we are, how many years later?
Nearly 10 years later.
More than 10 years. 12 years later, seeing the repercussions of that, you know, the Middle East is in chaos. ISIS has filled that void that was left after the destruction of so many regimes. Bad as they were, we have a much worse situation now. and many, many lives lost. Over a million people died in Iraq in that war.
Mm.
And Australia, as one of three nations that committed to being part of the Coalition of the Willing, that was the United States, Australia and Great Britain, were the only three nations that started that attack on Iraq in March 2003. You know, we have to accept, well, at least the politicians of the day have to accept that they are culpable for the outcomes of that war.
Mm. So the movement basically took a dive.
Mm. Yeah, because people felt, well, look at us.
What was the point of all of that?
Mm-hmm. You know, one in ten Australians marched that day and they didn't listen.
Yeah.
They just ignored us. They called us a bunch of ratbags. I think John Howard used something like that term for so many Australian citizens. And that
took a while, though, to get him out of office.
It did. Unfortunately, it did. But I think the legacy of that war and so many people opposing it and now seeing the results of that war is it would be very, very, very hard for Australia to reinvoke conscription as they did during the Vietnam War, because I honestly do think that although the peace movement has taken a dive, in the community, people can see what's happening. They know that it was a disastrous war. And I think that would be very, very strong opposition to us participating in anything as big as that again.
Mm.
However, they've slipped under the radar with the latest commitment to sending troops to Iraq again.
Yep.
Now it's about ISIS. Then it was about Saddam Hussein and weapons of mass destruction. Today it's about the barbarism of ISIS and terrorism. I don't think we're going to solve the problem of ISIS and their barbarism with bombs.
Mm-hmm.
We have to look for non-military solutions to the problem there. And sending our troops to Iraq along with the New Zealanders, which they had avoided up until this time in history, it is going to be counterproductive in the long run.
Mm. So is it sort of like something that Just Peace does and the network that you're part of, the Independent Peaceful Australia Network, part of, to look for those kind of solutions, non-military solutions?
Definitely. We had a conference, an Independent and Peaceful Australia Day, Independent and Peaceful Australian Network conference, our first one in Canberra last year.
Mm-hmm.
We brought together 100 people from those 50 organisations that have signed on to IPAN to talk about alternatives to military solutions. Well, they're not solutions really, they just whip the flames of conflict.
Yep.
to war at that conference. We had a range of people come along with a lot of expertise, and we also participated in the Peace Convergence to Canberra and in the Aboriginal contingent, the Frontier Wars contingent in the Anzac Day parade in Canberra last year.
Yep.
So it was an amazing time, an amazing week to be in Canberra, to really raise the profile of peace and independence, because we feel that it is our lack of independence, our tagging onto the superpower of the day, that is at the core of the problem of why we get involved in foreign wars.
Mm. Well, it's a business, isn't it?
It sure is a business.
I mean, you're seeing the mining industry and how that's, you know, slowing down now. You see the price of iron ore dropping. And so it's all sort of, they're not necessarily painting it doom and gloom, but you almost expect that there's going to be talk about a war in an effort to boost the economy and that sort of thing.
Yes, that is a real fear. I might just read you something here, if that's okay.
Yeah.
One of our members sent this to me this morning, Willie Bark. And he said the commercial sponsorship of the Gallipoli events, which have cost us $300 million, us taxpayers,
all right,
to run these events across Australia, include the Australian Submarine Corporation, BAE Systems, Boeing Australia, Raytheon Australia, Next Generation Battlefield Technology, Thales Australia, Munitions and Weapons, including the Australian Defence Forces F-88 Assault Rifle. They are among the major sponsors of the massive inundation of Gallipoli events that we've had in the lead up to this week, but this week will obviously be the pinnacle of it. So never again has become always and forever rather than never again. The shares are booming amid our sentimental hand-wringing, says Willie Bark. Yeah, so, you know, commercialism is definitely a part of it, and the military-industrial complex are the real winners of any war.
Mm. You're listening to 98.9 FM and the National Indigenous Radio Service. Annette Brownlee is convener of Just Peace Queensland. And Just Peace Queensland was formed back in the late 90s.
Just after 9/11, 2001, we had our first gathering.
Yeah. Mm. And you became, helped set up IPAN, the Independent Peaceful Australian Network, which is made up of 50 member orgs. Who are the other organisations? Queensland.
Quakers have a long, long commitment to peace, and Quakers in every state have joined IPAN, the Medical Association for Prevention of War, very strong member group and very professional. Various peace organisations, the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, Friends of the Earth in some states. So the list goes on.
Yep.
We come together really with fairly strong aims.
Yep.
But not all that specific. One of our specific aims and what brought us together as a national network, in fact, is the removal of US troops from Darwin. So in 2012, Julia Gillard, Prime Minister of the time, made the announcement with President Obama that as part of the pivot of the US into the Asia Pacific, we would host rotating forces of the US, US Marines in Darwin. It was to build up to 2,500 during the dry season in the Northern Territory.
Yep.
And that is the numbers that are there now over 3 years, each year, 2,500. But what they didn't tell us at the time was the plans that they have to establish a naval base in Stirling, south of Perth, and to use the Cocos Islands, north of Australia, as a drone base for the region.
Mm.
Now, we're talking about purchasing, very topical at the moment, about who's going to build the 12 submarines that were part of the white paper, the defence white paper projected. So these 12 submarines worth $40 billion to the taxpayer to be built over a number of years, and the F-35 fighter jets, another $10 billion. If you look at it carefully, you can only see that these are all part of our projected role as another wing of the American military. They are all built to be interoperable with American military hardware and software.
Yeah.
And one can only think and sometimes hear the truth that this is really about containment of China as the rising superpower in the region.
Mm. So that we're clear, because I'm just thinking, you know, in terms of the Defence Force, there's a lot of young people who choose it as a career.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not dead against people defending the country.
Absolutely not.
Right. So there's the Defence Force, but it's actually getting involved in conflict that we don't
that need is not to in be our interest.
In our interest.
Mm. And none of our affair, in fact.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about a defence force, one would hope that it was there for the defence of Australia,
yep,
not an offence force on behalf of a superpower of the day.
Yep.
So we've only had two superpower allies, and that was Great Britain and now the USA.
Yep.
And the wars since the Second World War, from Korea onwards, have been wars in foreign lands that were nothing to do with the defence of Australia.
Mm.
And I do have a strong appreciation of the need for a defence force. One of the big public meetings we had historian Peter Stanley from the Honest History Group speak. Are you familiar with Peter Stanley at all?
Just vaguely, but do fill us in.
Well, he was the chief historian for the War Museum in Canberra.
Yeah. Yes, well, that's put it all in perspective now, yes.
Written many, many books mm-hmm. about the wars that Australia has engaged in.
Yep.
And he similarly shares the view that our defence force should be about defending Australia. He posed to us in the public meeting that he spoke at that for us to have an independent defensive peace force, we would need to have a much bigger defence force. We would need to have more people as part of that defence force. And it may even cost us more money as the yearly budget goes for maintaining and building that defence force. But the long-term costs of the offensive role that we've played in supporting the United States since World War II mm-hmm. has not been tallied up. And compare that to the cost of maintaining an actual defence force, and I think we would come out ahead. I mean, one of the repercussions of our role in Iraq has been the influx of refugees from these war-torn countries.
Yep.
And when we think of the cost of the policies of the day in treating the refugees that come here by boat, it's phenomenal. You know, Nauru, Manus Island, all the detention centres, add up the costs of those practices and policies of the Australian governments of both political persuasions over the years,
and it's
horrendous.
Mm. 98.9 FM, National Indigenous Radio Service. This is Let's Talk. Karen Durante with you, and I'm with Annette Brownlee, convener of Just Peace Queensland. There's a special candlelight vigil that's being held ahead of Anzac Day. We'll get the details from you in just a moment here on 98.9 FM and Let's Talk. Annette Brownlee is convener of Just Peace Queensland. She's been spending the hour with us talking a bit about the organisation and also talking about war and peace. And we've been also taking your calls as well. Grant has phoned in. Hello, Grant.
Hello. A second ago when it was mentioned that the belief that conflict with the Australian forces of fought have been for the defence of Australia. Myself and a lot of others would very much dispute that. The Australian forces from the Second World War onwards had almost a constant presence in the local area throughout Asia, supporting our friend nations and assisting them in various things, and not just military conflicts, but various other humanitarian aid.
Yep.
And I think that's been up to past the Vietnam conflict. Again, there was constant deployment of troops through different Asian nations in conflict with other issues.
Yeah.
And that, I believe, and many, many others believe, that is definitely aid in the defence of our own nation. But we need to support our surrounding partners and assist them in the endeavours that they have, whether it's defending themselves against terrorists or whatnot.
Yeah.
And I think that is definitely a part of what a defence force is about.
Yeah. Grant, unfortunately, the line is really bad, and we're just getting you in dribs and drabs. But I think, Annette, have you got the drift of what he's saying?
Yeah. Thanks, Grant, for your input. And I suppose my view of our role in Southeast Asia, in even leading up to the Vietnam War, was historically, I see that period as a time where our troops were again fighting with the British. In fact, in post-colonial countries, Malaysia and other countries in our region, there was a period after the Second World War of decolonisation, and the colonisers, whether it was France in Vietnam or Britain in Malaysia, were not too keen on what might replace their governance in those areas. And there were popular nationalist movements that in many ways were wanting to build a socialist society, which governments of the day saw as a threat. Mm. So Vietnam was the pinnacle of that, that then went on to, you know, the tragedy of Cambodia, Laos. You know, millions of people died in those nationalist battles, really. Vietnam was about people wanting to live in their own nation and be free of the shackles of colonialism. And we went in there with the United States to fight against the government that they were choosing, or the path that they were choosing. Mm.
Yeah, so a pity about the bad line there, Grant, but I think, yeah, Annette, we got the gist of what you're trying to say. So I appreciate your phone call today, and to all of our callers today. Let's talk about the vigil that's happening.
On Friday night.
Yeah.
So the idea for candlelight vigils on Anzac Eve to commemorate the tragedy of war, how it affects the fullness of that tragedy, is that it isn't only about the soldiers who go to fight in those wars, but the communities that are devastated, the infrastructure that's lost, the grief that goes on for generations. So it started in Canberra a few years ago, and Canberra has a wonderful candlelight lantern parade down Mount Ainslie,
yep,
down to the War Memorial, which I took part in last year.
Mm-hmm.
And we're aiming to have similar events in all of the capital cities around Australia. So
is this the first for Brisbane?
First for Brisbane, right. Yes. Yeah, so we're meeting at Roma Street Forum, now also named Emma Miller Place.
Yep.
Quite appropriately, as Emma Miller was one of the anti-war activists in the First World War.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll have some stories and songs and poetry there. Sam Watson's coming along to speak, as well as Ruby Wharton from the Aboriginal Embassy.
Yep.
And we also have Dr. Danielle Villunas from the Medical Association from Prevention of War. Danielle's going to focus on the impact of PTSD on our returning veterans,
mm-hmm,
at the talk. So we'll meet there at 5 o'clock Friday night.
Bring candles along with you, and wear white poppies, because Anzac has always been associated with red poppies, but white ones.
Yes, it's a movement, an international movement, again, to shine a light on peace. As we commemorate the losses of war and the tragedy of it, it's a time to really become committed to making sure that wars, wherever possible, never happen again.
Yeah. In the meantime, where can we find out information about Just Peace Queensland and about the network?
Yeah, we've got a website, justpeacequeensland, or oneword.org, and our Facebook page. If you just type in Just Peace Queensland Facebook, you'll grab our Facebook page, and the flyer for the Anzac Eve vigil is up there on the Facebook page.
Right.
And I invite you to like our page. We'd like to get as many likes as we can.
Appreciate your time today, Annette.
And I appreciate your time, Ruby, and to your listeners for being part of the discussion that we've had.